This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. At the bottom of the hour, I'm going to have several local writers who are just getting ready for a big book signing at Barnes & Noble this coming weekend, and I'm looking forward to talking to them. Meanwhile, I want to remind everyone that it is still time to get in the Irene Goodman Literary Critique Auction. She does it every month at the beginning of the month. And if you are interested in having a really professional critique done, you should go to the IreneGoodman.com and sign up for that auction. Now, I'm just waiting. I'm going to be talking to Mary Higgins Clark in a moment. And as all of you know, she is one of my very favorite writers. And so I'm always excited when she's on. And I also want to tell everyone that I hope that you will be going to my website, which is radio-joy on paper. I have been doing a lot of work on that website in order to bring you an archives of all of the interviews that I have been doing over the past 3 years. It is hard to believe that it is 3 years. I just celebrated the anniversary of Joy on Paper. And so I wanted to get all of these interviews organized so that you can go back and have a look at them, both to be inspired by the authors who have written so many wonderful books, and also to listen to the literary agents who give you good advice on what you should do when you are submitting a query letter or just what you need to know about literary agents. So I'm hope that you will do that and go to radio-joy on paper, and also to my web, my Facebook page, and like me, which is Radio Joy on Paper. And I'm just waiting now, and I think I'm just getting excited. I always get so excited when I get my favorite author on. It's hard to believe. Whew, in 3 years, I think this is like her fourth or fifth, I think, time on Joy on Paper. She writes so much. So, okay. I am so happy to welcome back to Joy on Paper, Mary Higgins Clark. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Patsy, and it's so lovely to be back with you.
Well,
thank you for having me.
Well, you know, I just celebrated the third anniversary of Joy on Paper. So,
and I understand it's being beautifully syndicated.
Yes, well, it is, and I am so happy that you have been a part of it right almost from the beginning, because you are, I think I'm not wrong when I say that you are the favorite guest of so many of my listeners, because I get all these questions from them. They want to know, how does she do it? How do you come out with all these ideas?
Well, starting with that, early on, I had 5 ideas at the same time. As I get older, maybe only 1 or 2 pop up. But I've never been a time when I say, I don't know what to write.
Well, the new book, which is called I've Got My Eyes on You, is fantastic. It's another, you know, I always compare your books to my mother's devil's food cake. They're so delicious, and you want to eat it all in one go, but I control myself, Mary. I set aside time so that I don't read it all in one go, because it is so delightful to read your books.
Oh, thank you so much, Patsy. And when you say devil's food cake, my favorite lunch was a devil dog. 5 cents. At school, I'd run out and buy a bologna sandwich and a devil dog every day.
Well, you know, when I think about you, I always am so amazed. And of course, we know that you've been doing this a long time. But this book, the new book, I've Got My Eyes on You, is as fresh as anything. And I want to tell you something. I've been talking to writers who want to know how you're able to so beautifully make us feel connected to your characters. Right from the beginning, I cared about the characters. And when I finished this book, I was crying. I found I was crying. I was happy, you know, with the ending, but that you have us so, you tie us up emotionally with your characters.
Oh, well, that, I'm so grateful to hear that, because before I start a book, the first 50 pages, I rewrite a dozen times, but I do a character sketch of the characters in the book, where they went to school, what kind of life they live, in this case, what the parents are like, so that by the time I actually get them straight and put them on paper, I can see them and hear them talk. And then I know I'm ready to write the book.
Well, that's why I think they are so wonderful, because really, when I went back, you try to analyze your writing, and you say, well, she doesn't use a lot of words to describe people. She doesn't use she doesn't have like pages and pages of description like you find sometimes in books. But in such a simple way, you make us know these people. You make us care about these people. For example, in the new book, of course, you tell what you want to tell about, but I want to just say that the character of Jamie, I cared so much about Jamie that I was just emotionally tied up with him.
Well, you see, Jamie is really my grandson. He has the Fragile X syndrome, which means the brain is good, but it can't send the signals out. For example, his name is Davey, and he will remember your name if he meets you in 40 years. He will remember which car is yours in a parking lot, but he can't read or write. But he just has a memory, and the way Jamie acts in the book, talks in the book, is Davey, our Davey. That's the way he is. And I wanted to do a character that has a problem, is intellectually damaged, because, of course, the parents are so protective of him and so afraid that something will happen to him. In this case, will Jamie end up confessing that he killed Carrie? And the mother is frantic with worry. He's her only child. She was over 40 when...
No.
She had brain damage, lack of oxygen, and now she's a widow. So the thought of Jamie being arrested and going to prison has her frantic. And then there is the other mother of another boy who was under suspicion. And then you don't know, but you don't know that there are other eyes watching what's going on.
Well, that's the beauty of your book. There's always something else going on, which is why you are the queen of suspense, because you keep us going to the very end. But so that, I think this is a very touching story, what you told about your grandson, because you certainly captured this feeling in the book. And as I said, when I was so caught up in the book, and it's hard always when I get your books, I want to sit down and tell everybody, don't bother me, forget the laundry, forget everything. I've got a Mary Higgins Clark book, but I try to space myself so I don't finish it in one day. It usually lasts 3 days if I'm lucky, because I just want to enjoy that feeling of knowing the people that you write about. I'm in that community. I feel like I could walk around that community. And you do it so simply. It's really quite amazing.
Oh, bless you. Well, I never liked long descriptions when I was reading a book. And the old saying is, the greatest art of book is a shot rang out in the night. The idea is you want to capture the reader right away. And doing long descriptions can turn you off. So I want to tell the story with words as easy as possible, so you get a mental image.
And that's what you do. I think many of my listeners, because your books seem so perfect, they actually, I think they will be surprised to hear that you write, the first 50 pages a number of times.
Well, it was funny. I'm married 22 years. John and I were widower. But the first year we were married, he said to one of my daughters, "I'm worried about your mother. The new book is going well. She's going to throw it out the window." And Patty laughed and said, "We've heard that for the last 30 books."
So, you do. I mean, I think it will be encouraging to writers to understand that you do have to really hone your talent and hone your writing.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when I read stories about writers who sit down and the words come out and there's the book, I don't believe it. I think, my God, that's fantasy. Because you have to tell the story so that you keep the reader interested, following. And the best way to do that is have characters they care about. And that's always my goal, is you care about the characters.
And that's what you accomplish in every book. It's so wonderful that you have this ability, and that, you know, as I've told my listeners over the years, they know the story about how, you know, your beginning. And I, as a matter of fact, I always am delighted to tell them about the time that you were a stewardess, and I actually have that up on my webpage, and I know you have it on yours, because it makes you so, your background is so interesting.
Well, I was blessed that I was a stewardess. I mean, Pan American was the hottest of the airlines, and our uniforms were so perfect. The shoes matched, white gloves, the pocketbooks had to be the same. So it was just a glamorous feeling to be a flight hostess. And then, of course, I went to Europe, Africa, and Asia. And to be able to have done that, and especially because at that time, Europe was just rebuilding. Half of London was bomb park. So to see it just beginning after the war, it was very special. And I have to tell you a quick story. I had said it was only one girl with 9 men in the crew. And when we got to London, I said, "Oh, this is so wonderful. Let's go out and walk around." And the guy said, "Honey, you've flown across the Atlantic. Let's have dinner. And we'll take you around tomorrow." And I said, "If you guys gonna think I'll just sit when I'm in London." So I walked down off Moon Street, and I was saying to myself, "That's Green Park, and Trafalgar Square is that way." And there was a tap on my shoulder, and a lady in a load of makeup, raunchy fur, said to me, "Beg your pardon, love, but this is my corner."
Oh. Wow. That's a beautiful...
I was running back to the guys, and I said, "I'll have dinner and a drink with you."
Oh, that's a beautiful story. Now, when, I was thinking, now your book made me cry. Is there any book that's made you cry?
You know, some of them, I'm so emotional by the time I get people together that there are tears in my eyes. Yes. A number of them. I've had tears in my eyes as I finished them.
And that is, I think that is such a great accomplishment for a writer when they tap into this emotion. And so I was really thrilled with this new book. I've got my eyes on you because I thought, oh boy, I've got tears in my eyes with this book.
Well, I wanted you to. I wanted you to share my reactions to the way the story ends. And if I give that to you, I am so happy, literally happy, that you got that reaction.
Now, one of my listeners asked, how do you come up with all these names? And I'm thinking, you know, I don't know how you do it, but whenever I read one of your books, the name seems so right for the character.
Well, that's very important. And, you know, it's funny. When I go out to a black tie, they always have the names of people on it. And I take them home to see if there's a name that I like to use. And I'm careful not to use the same names in books, even long ago books, because I just want them all to be fresh. And Aileen in this book, the main character, I had a reunion dinner with some friends from high school. And one of them, her name was Aileen. And I thought, you know, that's a different name and it's good. So I don't think she knows it yet, but she named that character.
Oh, that's fun. That's fun for her. Now, are you working on another book right now? Well, you're always working on.
I do a book every spring, every November. I have one come out, and it's the one I co-write with Alla Faire Burt. The publisher liked the characters in one of the books about 5 years ago and said, we want to see those characters continue. But we know you don't want to write one alone. I said, God, no, not two in 1 year. But we work together beautifully, and the books have been very successful. We're working on one right now that will come out next November, and it will be finished by late July. And at that point, I'll start saying, what about next spring? What am I going to write?
Well, do you have a set time that you write? Are you in a number of pages that you do every day or not?
You can't really do it like that. I know some writers write so many words a day and then put down the pen. I used to get up at 5 in the morning and write until 6:45 when I had to get the kids up to school and go to my job. Now I'm not that wonderful. I get up about 8 o'clock, have breakfast, and then go up to start writing.
And as you said, even though you've written so many books, you work hard on each book. You really don't just sort of write it out and say, this is it. You actually work on each page.
Oh, absolutely. It's not fair to the reader to turn in a sloppy book just because you think people will read it. Many years ago, an editor said to me, Mary, you could write the phone book once. And he was absolutely right, because if a book is a letdown, people will say, oh, I used to like her, but now I like this one. So you're playing the game new every time you put pen on paper.
Now, when you're working on a book, do you know in advance exactly the ending, or does it come out sort of as you go along?
No, I have to know the ending of the book, because it's like William Tell shooting an arrow off his son's head, or an apple, I guess it was. If you miss the mark, the book is no good. And I have to know where I'm going with the book. Who was the one who did it? And why did he do it? And those are my questions as I go along, because I know I'm going here It's as though when you go from New York to California, you either go by way of Canada or by way of the South, but you're always ending up right there with when the book ends, knowing that you're heading there.
Well, you know, when you're writing, do you feel now, after all of these years, that you've really, it's almost a spiritual experience for you? That you have this talent and this ability that you can share this story with people?
Oh, I feel so blessed. I always say that everybody gets a gift at the cradle. And the godmother who might have given me the voice of an angel did not show up. I can't sing a note. The dancer was out of town. The one godmother who showed up was the one who said, you will be a storyteller. And I'm awfully grateful she was the one who came to the crib, because I've had so much joy out of writing. And I never take for granted success. Each book is a new book. It's like having a new baby, and you do everything you can to be sure the baby will be healthy.
Now, when you were a child, was there a teacher who encouraged you? Because I've been talking to teachers, and I keep saying, you have to encourage your students.
Well, yes, because even when I was 11, we had to put words together in a paragraph. And what I wrote, they sent me around to read in all the other classes, because I had taken the situation and turned it into a story. So I was very encouraged along the way by teachers, very encouraged. And it's so important. Of course, I cannot put a crayon on without having something that's ludicrous. But one time in the fifth grade, I had to do one of those keep them flying during the time of the war. And the illustration I did, the teacher held it up and said, who did this nightmare? But fortunately, it didn't make me feel bad, because I knew I couldn't draw and I knew I could write. But sometimes teachers can be so inspirational, and other times something they say can hurt a kid so much that they'll stay away from it.
Well, that's one of the why I like to talk to teachers is, you know, I have met people who want to write and they'll say, oh, well, my teacher said I wasn't good at grammar, or I ended sentences with prepositions. And I said, well, yes, well, it doesn't matter. You know, you can end a sentence with a preposition if you want. You know, all of these old rules don't, you know, necessarily apply when you're writing a novel, because you have to, as you do, you hone every page to make sure that it's great, but you don't have to have all these negative thoughts in your head.
Oh, that you should never let the flow stop you. You can always go back and change a sentence. Well, you know what Winston Churchill said when someone criticized his grammar. That is the sort of thing up with which I will not put.
Exactly. Because the important thing as you have acquired this talent of telling the story, and we are very lucky that you were born on Christmas Eve, right?
Oh, my God. And the day before, I was only 89. When I woke up on Christmas Eve, I said, my God, I'm 90.
Oh, my goodness. But, this is a wonderful thing about writing, isn't it? That you can keep going forever.
Oh, it's a wonderful thing. And, of course, at this age, I count every day as a blessing. But I'm so glad I've lived to be this old. It's been interesting, it's been fun, and I have a large family, and I'm about to have my first great-grandchild. So I have a lot to live for.
And the beautiful thing about your writing is that, as I said, this book is as fresh and bright and beautifully written as anything you've ever done. And the joy, really, of being a writer is that, you know, so many careers, you have to stop at a certain age. You can't do it anymore. But writing is something that you can continue doing, and you can continue getting better.
Well, I tell that to people who say, I want to be a writer. I know I have a story I want to tell. And I say to them, tell it. Don't hesitate. Make yourself start, and then it will flow. And I say to older people, the best gift you could give to your family is to write your own story about how it was. And write it. It's not expensive to have it self-published. And that would be some gift under the tree to have the way we were.
I do that too. I tell everyone to do that because, as you said, it is it's a lasting gift through the generations. I mean, don't we all wish that our great-great-great-great-grandparents back in the 1700s and 1600s, if they had all written out their stories, wouldn't it be a joy to be able to read them today?
Well, with all the books I've written, my granddaughter said my memoir, Kitchen Privileges, is her favorite.
Well, I think it's my favorite, too, actually. I forgot to mention it because I've read it a couple of times over, and actually every time that you come on, I like pull it out again because I think it's a wonderful book.
Well, thank you. It's a very honest book, and somehow I wanted to tell it. And of course, now I have done very well financially, but I haven't forgotten the time when my two brothers, my mother and I, after my father died, lived on $78 a month in a three-room apartment because we couldn't keep up the lovely home. So I remember very distinctly every dollar counted, every nickel counted. That's why even though I'm successful, I do not forget that. And I really try to be helpful to other people because I understand what a crunch it is to know the gas bill is due, and you just have to make it wait, and you have to worry about it. So I think having had that experience has been a great help to me all my life, because I am grateful for what I have, and there is a saying, much is expected of those to whom much has been given, and I try to live by that.
And you certainly give us so much pleasure, Mary, with all of your books. And the wonderful thing about this age and this internet age is that we can go back and start from the very beginning and read all of them, you know. So it's, I just want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. And I want to tell everyone that they should get this, the newest book, I've Got My Eyes on You. And to remind them that Kitchen Privileges is a perfect example of a memoir. And Mary Higgins Clark, thank you so much for being on. I'm going to be anxiously waiting for the next Devil's Food Cake so that I can have another 3 days. I hope I can hold off and keep it for 3 days because, as always, you've delivered a wonderful book that really touches the heart in so many ways. It's always painful when somebody dies in one of your books, but we know somebody has to die. But it is always so heartwarming that the care that we feel for the your characters, the how they stay with us long after we finish the book.
Well, that is the nicest thing anyone could say about one of my books. Thank you. That's what I want to do. And when you tell me I did it, I rejoice.
Well, thank you, Mary. Again, thank you for being on Joy on Paper, especially as I'm celebrating the 3rd anniversary. You are my star guest.
I am flattered and joyous. Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye-bye now, Mary. Bye.
Bye.
Whoa. Okay, let's do a quick commercial break, and then I've got some people here in the studio anxious to come in, so hold on.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660, or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow. And like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat. I would flip-flop all night long. I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you can move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed. It's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry MyPillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever.
MyPillow is now offering 50% off their 4-pack special.
Support Joy on Paper and local authors. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I, or call 1-800-871-1543. That's 800-871-1543.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome back to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing. And I've got in the studio with me some guests. And whoa, I'm happy to welcome back to Joy on Paper Eli Gonzalez. Hi, Eli.
Patsy, wonderful to see you. Thank you so much for having me on again.
Okay, well, I just had the Queen of Suspense, and I suppose maybe we could call you the King of Ghostwriters. How about that?
I'll take it.
You take it. Okay. Well, Eli's here with two of the writers that he's worked with. They've got books coming up, and tell us about, there's a signing coming up.
Yes, we have a book signing at the Barnes & Noble in Carrollwood on Saturday from 1 to 2 p.m. Barnes & Noble is very, very generous with local authors, and we have a great agreement. And so I'm very excited about this group of writers. First, I want to introduce Adrian Conway. And Adrian's got an amazing book. It's geared to fixing the core of the family dynamic. You know, nowadays there's so many people from blended families or from broken homes or just the family isn't what it used to be. And this book really speaks to every individual in the family in a very fresh and enlightening way.
Well, Adrian, I'm so happy to welcome you to Joy on Paper. And so tell us about your book. It's called Reawaken, How to Revive the Importance of Family Self and Respect.
Well, thank you very much, ma'am. The biggest thing about the book is if you're a single parent or you've experienced a divorce in your family or, you know, while you were growing up, or you have, I'll say, some misunderstandings with family and friends, this book allows you to get back, you know, in touch with everything. So it really addresses fathers, sons, daughters, mothers, and it gives you an opportunity to let the past go. Because whatever the problem was in the house, it has to stop with you, and that resurgence of family starts with you. So that's the basic premise of the book.
Okay, well, that's true. And one of the problems is, of course, when in family dynamics, when people hold grudges years and years.
Absolutely. But the thing about that is, you know, you have to let that go, because the longer you continue to hold on to something, it really retards that progress that you have a chance to make. You know, so if you let that go, that next blessing is going to be in front of you, not behind you. So you let that old baggage go, catch that blessing, because you may need both hands to do it. And that's the biggest thing about this. That's what this is all about. So revive that sense of family, revive that sense of self.
Okay, so tell us some stories about people who have done it. Have you had some success stories to tell us about?
Absolutely. The biggest success story, I'd say, would be my family. You know, we grew up, I had the blessing of having my parents with me the entire time. They stayed together. We got the daily lessons. And the first thing you learn is, and it's hard for some people to understand, but fear is the first thing you learn. Fear of disappointing your parents. Fear of, you know, tarnishing the name. And the next thing that comes with that is respect, because you respect the structure, the rules of the house. And finally, one day you'll understand why. I mean, perfect example, my dad coached our little league team 1969 1970. He would have to leave after every game, and I was like, man, I used to always be upset about why he had to leave. And didn't get a chance to talk to him after the game or anything else, because he had to go back to work. Fast forward to 1995. I'm coaching my son's little league team. After the first game, I had to go back to work. And I was like, wow, Dad had to go back to work. That's why he couldn't stay. And the first thing I did was thank him for coaching our little league baseball team. You know, so it allowed me, again, you have that fear, that respect, that understanding phase. And as you mature, you can let things go. That's what it's about.
Oh, that's the idea of maturity, and perhaps that's what we need in the world, because it would be nice if people could let things go and start fresh.
Start fresh, absolutely.
Reawaken. Reawaken.
Exactly. Yeah,
and how about that voice of his, though? Don't you think it would be a great audiobook?
I'm thinking. I was thinking about that. The minute he started talking, I thought, whoa, I've got a radio voice here. Maybe he can come and be my partner here.
He can sub in for you sometimes.
Yeah, he can come
absolutely.
And join me, huh?
Absolutely. If you need some help, I'd be glad to help.
I think so. He's taking to the microphone here. You know, so, well, of course, as you said, it's you were very fortunate that you had your father
right.
with you and your mother. And unfortunately, there's such a terrible lack of fathers watching over their children.
Absolutely.
In this day and age.
And it causes a problem, especially, let's say, you know, if you have a daughter, the first person that's supposed to tell her how special she is, how sweet, you know, how smart, is Dad. He has that top cover. And as long as he has top cover, she doesn't worry about anything. You know, but if Dad is removed and he's not in touch, she feels lost, and she's going to seek that affirmation from somebody outside the family. Typically, it's one of the wolves that wants something from her. That, in that time, that defines her now as being outside, as opposed to, you know, within the family construct. So
are you able to get together with groups of people to talk to them about this?
That's one of the things that I've always done in a way, but this right here will allow me to do it in a better format, a more better way.
Yeah, this book is a launching pad to a whole new ministry, if you will, of reaching out. Those of you that are listening to us on the radio, all of you, Adrian is an African-American man, and this is geared to everyone, but specifically, if it could be specific, to the African-American family. You know, those inner-city families that are really struggling and really broken up.
Absolutely.
And so the goal for this book is for him to be able to launch and speak to groups of any race, but specifically that demographic, to be able to help the healing process and help them figure out what their roles are and come back to reawaken the family bonds that so many people are missing right now.
Well, I want to say that I lived, when I was a child, I lived in Detroit.
Okay.
And in those days, the family, the black family, was very, very together. They were so strong.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And it was always such a joy when I was a child to watch our neighbors who were black, who all on Sundays, the entire family would be dressed up.
Absolutely.
Father and mother and all the kids.
And Sunday dinner.
And they were together.
Absolutely.
And it was so beautiful to see. And it's so sad that
we've lost a lot of that. Yes, ma'am. We really have.
And it's so hard to understand it. And I hope that this book because it is wonderful. As Eli knows, writing a book in whatever your profession, if you write a book, it really helps you to define yourself and to be able to put yourself out there to meet people. And Eli, that's what you do. Whatever it is, whether you're in construction or you're an insurance salesman, if you write a book, it is great, isn't it, Eli?
Absolutely, it's a joy. What I do, it's such a joy. We meet fantastic people with great hearts, with great visions, and you know, they may not have the time to write the book. And we come alongside them, we interview them, and we write the books and edit the books and publish it for them. And we absolutely love it. I now have a team of three full-time writers and editors, and working with people like Adrian. You'll see Daniel here. You'll hear from Daniel here in a minute, who wrote his own book, and we just needed to edit that. It's just fantastic to take those important messages and help amplify them out to the world. That's what we do through the written word, and it's the best job in the world.
It is. Well, Adrian, I want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. I think this is an important book.
Yes, ma'am.
And I think you have an important job ahead of you. And I look forward to it.
I really look forward
to hearing more about your. You have to keep me updated.
Absolutely.
Let me know when you're going to be speaking somewhere, and I will make sure that I talk about it on air.
All right.
And have you back, because as I said, I think it's so important that we help families
Absolutely.
Get back together.
Yes, ma'am. I mean, basic little things like, say, young men holding a door for a woman that's a step behind them. And you don't see that anymore, you know, and it doesn't cost you anything. But it makes that person feel so special that you just took the thought to hold the door for you.
And then when somebody holds the door for you, say thank you. My
thank you.
Goodness.
Yes, ma'am.
I've seen that too.
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely.
So, absolutely. Well, I want to thank you, Adrian, for being here today. And Eli, we're going to sort of switch chairs. And we have Daniel who's going to come up. But I'm going to have, I love Adrian's voice. I'm going to have him back. Okay?
Thank you very much, dear. Okay. I appreciate that.
Okay.
All right.
Yes, and I'll introduce Daniel while he's getting ready. So Daniel he's just a very intelligent man. He's a pastor, and he wrote a book called The Battle for Main Street. And in a nutshell, what it's about, and it's a lot more than a nutshell, this book is very rich in content. He's a phenomenal writer. If you like the C.S. Lewis style of writing, that very intellectual style writing, that's him all the way. You'll hear him speak here in a minute. But his book is really about correlates to what Adrian's book is about, but it's about the core values of America. We understand that we've progressed, but we've sort of lost our compass in a way from what the founding fathers wanted, and he has a very modern look at how to get back to what the country was designed to be, and that's The Battle for Main Street.
Okay, it's called The Battle for Main Street: How to Reclaim America's Heritage, and it's Daniel Venturino. Right?
Yes. Thank you, Patsy.
Okay.
Thank you for having me on, first of all. It's a really delight and pleasure to be in studio with you. I love this.
Okay. Well, great. Now, so tell us a little bit about the book.
Okay. So the basic premise of the book is it boils down to faith, family, and freedom. Now, here's what I see the problem is with our country. We have to share the will to be governed by each other. That's what a republic is. You let other people share in governing. But we don't want to be governed by each other, the liberal versus conservative, the Democrat versus Republican, the religious versus the non-religious. We want to govern them. We don't want to be governed by them. So this creates a hostile environment, an environment that could, civil war comes from that kind of environment.
So let's talk about some of the premises of the book. Where are we going to start?
Well, I would love to start by telling you that our country wouldn't be a country if it wasn't for religious people who were trying to find a place to worship God the way that they saw fit. So why did Columbus sail across the ocean blue? Was it to discover gold? Was it to discover a passage to the East Indies? That's what his story was for the king. But in his personal diary, he says, I want to bring religion or Christendom to the new world. So get on a boat and go across it. Because he had a desire in his heart to see people understand what he understood about the reality of our universe, which is it came from a creator, and he put his physical laws on the universe, and he put his moral laws in the hearts of men. Fast forward 200 years, pilgrims are being chased out of England. It's illegal to be a pilgrim. So they go and they hang out in Holland for a little while, and then they get this idea. Let's go to America. We've heard about the Jamestown. We've heard about the Roanoke. We know that there are colonies there. And by the way, if we go there, maybe the king won't have us killed. So they had a very vested interest in doing what was best for their family and for their belief system. So they knew that half of them would die on the way over. And they gambled. They took the risk anyway. They thought it was so important to do this for themselves and for their families and for their religious freedom that they knew, like 50% of us will probably perish on the way over, if we make it at all. Then there was a miracle called Squanto. A Native Indian, a Native American, a person who spoke English miraculously because he had met some other Englishmen in the different colonies. He shows up. He befriends them. He says, don't worry, I'll teach you how to fend for yourselves and plant and have corn. And then that's where the first Thanksgiving comes from. But every one of those pilgrims said, if it weren't for Squanto, if God didn't send Squanto, we would have perished in the New World. So they knew that their worldview was intimately connected to the understanding that we're all dependent on each other. We need help from one another. And if we don't have brotherly love, and if we don't have a sense of I'm going to share with you, and you can share with me, and I'm going to do what's right, and I'm going to expect what you do to do what's right, and it's all because of their religious beliefs. So what founding father did not have positive religious beliefs? You can't name them. I mean, the closest you can get is Benjamin Franklin, and he loved George Whitefield, actually underwrote the missionary work of George Whitefield. So a very strong argument can be made to say that if it wasn't for this human religious or faith driving people, there might not be a country at all. We might be, you know, England the second.
Exactly. And most people really don't understand the depth of the founders' interest in religion, their knowledge of the Bible. Most of them actually learned Greek to be able to understand the Bible. Latin and Greek was not, you know, it's so funny when I was recently studying about Yale, because I'm going to make a trip up to Yale, which was founded in 1701. And the curriculum was Latin and Greek because they wanted everyone to be able to not just understand the Bible in English, but to understand the depth of it and what was really there.
So 100 years ago, it would not have been uncommon to teach Greek and Latin in the public school. Now we have a class called Remedial English.
Yeah, I know.
How far have we come? And then if we had always taught Greek, Hebrew, and Latin, you know, there's this psychological theory that, you know, when you learn other languages at an early age, it actually opens up and expands more parts. It's kind of like music. If you learn to play the piano at an early age, it actually activates and brings different parts of your brain that would lay dormant and brings them into harmony with each other. So, you know, if you're in Remedial English, by the way, this is not a knock on you. Uh-huh. I like you. I appreciate you. But there are a lot of Greek and Hebrew and Latin lexicons out there available at your public library.
Exactly. Well, yes, that's absolutely right. And I like that little shout out to public libraries, because I'm a great believer in public libraries and how they can really help you. You can get out there and just get books and just start. Just start reading.
I love the library. If I don't have a book in my hand, I generally have it on my phone and I'm driving. So you know, talking about Narnia and the C.S. Lewis and how maybe my style is somewhat pertinent to his, my mom read those to me when I was a boy. I had them on my shelf. They were full of beautiful pictures and illustrations that made you filled you with wonderment and awe. And then as an adult, you know, 18 or 19 or 20-year-old adult rereading them and seeing all these beautiful allegorical religious pictures that connected me back to the faith that I had been raised on. And I go, I got to read every single word this man has written. And I don't think I've accomplished that, but I've certainly worked my way through his repertoire.
Well, that's one of the wonderful things about being able to read and why mm-hmm. I encourage everyone to read, because you get deeper into a subject and one subject will lead you to another subject because there is so much superficiality out there. Mm-hmm. This light news, just little tidbits that you really never understand anything unless you start reading and get into it.
So the beautiful thing about book, and this actually is part of my heritage, and I'll explain that in a moment. As an author, I want to be somebody that you read me, and then you say, boy, he referenced G.K. Chesterton a bunch. He talked about C.S. Lewis a whole lot. He talked about Michael Brown. I want to go back and read those source materials, because that's what happened to me. When I read Mere Christianity, a C.S. Lewis book, I wanted to read G.K. Chesterton. I wanted to read George MacDonald. You know, this is the source material from which he derived some of his ideas. Well, now I'm in that stream. I'm excited that I'm in that almost lineage ancestry that you can trace back like a family tree and get back to the original source material. So I hope to be downstream from authors who are, you know, actually read.
Yeah, this is exactly why I love to do this program, because I want people to follow that pattern. Mm-hmm. Read a book, and then when you see, and this is a beautiful thing about the internet age, that when you see a word, even a word, you say, why? What does that word really mean? Where did it come from? And it's so easy now. If you're reading actually on Kindle, you can actually click on the word, yeah. and it tells you where that word came from. One of my problems, I read a book and I'm always like stopping, you know, and going to the next thing just to understand it a little deeper.
The context,
yeah. And I want to know more. I want to know where that word came from, and then I start understanding, and then I even place names.
Oh, sure.
I want to know when I read something and it mentions a place, I want to know where that place is. I want to visualize it in my head. I love to look at Google Earth, mm-hmm. because if I'm reading a book nowadays and it or Google Maps, because I will actually go to that street and look at it. And this is so wonderful. Oh my goodness, we're running out of time. I didn't even see Big Ed in the control room. Oh my goodness.
And I just want to shout out that Anna Aloisi is also going to be at the book signing. Her book is called Reinvent Your Relationship. And it's a phenomenal book. It'll be in English and in Spanish. Again, it's Barnes & Noble in Carrollwood this Saturday from 1 to 2 p.m.
My goodness, I've had so much fun talking to these guys. Okay, everybody, I want to thank Big Ed in the control room. Thank you so much. He's saluting me. I'm saluting him. And he's, my goodness, we're out of time. Bye-bye now.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City Tampa Bay WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3
Listen
Troop Talks The Caravan Pauses I'm Michael Toscano the